The music's on, the disco ball has dropped, and it's time to get this party started. You're listening to episode 28 of Disco Trek, a Star Trek Discovery After Party podcast here on the Tricorder Transmissions Network. I'm your host, Heather Barker, and with me at the turntable tonight is our new co-host for Weekly Trek, my good friend Alex Perry. Welcome back to Disco Trek, Alex.
Hi, Heather. I'm here under Starfleet Regulation 7C to take over for Jeff for the week.
Oh, my. Well, Jeff will be back soon, but I'm super excited to have Alex here. If you guys don't know, Alex does some writing over at TrekCore, and he is our expert in Canon Connections, which means I don't have to work so hard. So, ha ha ha. For those who aren't familiar with the podcast, we're a community-based Star Trek discotheque of sorts, focusing on each episode of Discovery as they air. Tonight, we're going to be discussing the season 2 premiere episode called Brother. With us to talk about Brother are two members of the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas convention group, which is the exclusive gateway to gain admission on the show. It's a Facebook group. It's an STLV book. Most of all, it's a family. Our first guest is one of those very important family members. I adore him. He is Patrick Escudero. Patrick, we're so happy to have you.
Oh, it's great to be here. I'm working on my Spock beard, but I haven't gotten there yet.
Well, you've got plenty of time to get there. I expect to see that in what, seven months, 6 months, whenever.
It will probably take that long.
Let's see. I have to quickly. We are at 191 days to STLV. However, our other dear friend shares my namesake. I am grateful to her for helping come up with our Queer Trek tagline, Live, Love, and Prosper. She is my great friend, Heather Kirby. Heather, welcome. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to be here.
It's double Heather. We're not alternate versions of each other. We're just two awesome Heathers.
Exactly. So, no mirror universe here tonight.
Nope. Super excited to jump in. We're going to hop into our discussion here in just a minute. But first, we have some housekeeping to do. I just wanted to go over how Disco Trek works. As I mentioned, we're a community-focused podcast. You want to join the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas group on Facebook. Once you do that, we post every week. You'll see the Disco Trek art and then information on the recording time and date. Just comment on that post to be entered, and we use a random generator a couple days later to pick the winners. Once you've been on the podcast, you can't come back while we're doing regular episodes. You can definitely pop back in during the off season, depending on what we do. But we like to give everyone a fair chance to come on and share their excitement and love for Star Trek Discovery. Another great thing that we do here at the network is we have a Patreon. Our Patreon is family to us. We love all of our patrons. And I think, Alex, you can fill us in a little bit about what Patreon is.
Yeah, if any of our listeners enjoy the shows and the content that we produce and would like to help support mitigating some of the costs of doing so, please feel free to join our Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And for most of our shows, you'll get an early unedited release of the show several days before it's made widely available. And there are Patreon hangouts. They're a lot of fun also.
Yes, they are. I need to make some more. We're trying to change up the times so that our friends outside of the US and Canada can join us. And I guess just this side of the continent. So look forward to that happening soon. But now, spoiler alert. I'm going to tell you a little about how the show works, and then we're going to get into our discussion. Since we're back to normal Star Trek episodes, we're back to our normal format. So the show is in three segments. The first is Drop the Record, which is our opening remarks and reactions to the episode. Play a New Track is the second one, where we explore what we've learned that's new about Star Trek universe. And then Spin It Again is our look back at standout moments, scenes, characters, themes, whatever you feel is awesome and you want to talk about some more. So let's go ahead and get started. I am so excited to be back doing this. So let's drop the record. Star Trek is back on TV. This season, it feels brand spanking new, even though we're picking up right where we left off. So let's go ahead and jump in. Heather, tell me what your thoughts were after watching the season premiere.
Well, my initial thought after watching the premiere was, this was my Star Trek. This was the Star Trek that I knew that this show had the potential to be after watching season one, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, tell me more. Tell me why.
Because, I mean, it's so, one of the things I love the most about Discovery is that it's so character driven, and these characters have so many layers and have so many different things that make you love them. And that really shined in the premiere, was just all the characters and how they, not necessarily like just themselves, but how they fit together.
Yeah.
Like, one thing that really got me was from the opening sequence when they Burnham goes into the monologue about space, the final frontier, and she says, "We have always looked to the stars to discover who we are." And that, like, to me, that's the central core of Discovery, and also why the name Discovery just fits them, because it's not about discovering new races and new civilizations. It's about discovering things inside yourself.
I kind of absolutely love this, and I see why we're both named Heather. And I'll try not to say that throughout the whole episode, but what I'm like right in front of me is space, the final frontier, above us, around us, within us. And I thought immediately, like, that is really the core of Star Trek, and especially the core of Discovery, is that exploration of our humanity. So that resonates very strongly. So props there. Anything else you want to say about first reactions?
Anson Mount is absolutely wonderful as Captain Pike. And I will talk more about him later, but just first reaction, he's fantastic.
All right. Sounds good. Okay, Patrick, I think you've watched it a couple times maybe now. So I think you like it, but you tell us.
I think we're up to 5 now at this point. And I probably am still missing some pieces from it. But one of the things that stood out for me was just the inclusion of the bridge crew, even more than in the first season. You know, the roll call that Pike did with the bridge crew, really, it really ties together that theme of family that they've been trying to push in the series. And now we see, you know, we've gotten bits and pieces of the bridge crew previously, but now we know everybody's first name. We've been introduced to them, you know, directly in the series. And Pike's really trying to bring them together in a way that obviously Lorca never would have.
Yeah. It's nice to have a unified crew.
Agreed.
All right, Alex.
I think this is a show. I loved it. I loved the episode and everything about it. And it really felt like the show and the production had really kind of hit its stride with this episode. You know, it felt very comfortable. Everybody felt very comfortable with their characters. The show has sort of settled into its groove. And if this is the rest of the season is anything like this, we have a really fun season of Star Trek ahead of us.
Absolutely. So I wanted to have a little bit of discussion about how, and you know, this is one episode for an entire season. So, you know, we don't know what's coming ahead, but I've paid attention to some chatter. I'm actually trying to take a step back from social media and not letting it influence questions I ask or how I'm thinking about the episode. Last year, I did a lot of like glued to Twitter, and I'm still kind of glued to Twitter, but I'm trying not to let it influence me as much. But one thing that stood out to me, as Heather said, is like this episode, the start to this season, felt different from the first season. And I think a big part of that was the cohesiveness of the crew, and was the influence of Captain Pike being such a different captain than Captain Lorca. So I'm just curious if you guys kind of felt this too, and whether it's lighter, both visually and tonally. And we also got like a heck of a lot of amazing CGI, which, Alex, I don't know if you know anything about whether we're going to see more of this CGI moving forward, or if this was kind of a season premiere type of thing.
So one of the reasons why the co-executive producers were removed from the show, so they were removed about five episodes into filming the season, is partially in addition to rumors around an abusive workplace, was also around running over the budget significantly in those first few episodes. So I think the level of production, which was incredibly high, I mean, Alex Kurtzman was right when he said on the red carpet, he was asked about whether he was interested in taking over the Star Trek movie franchise again. And he said, well, we're sort of giving you a Star Trek movie on the small screen every week. And given the cinematic aspect ratio and given the incredible special effects of the season premiere, that is certainly the case. So I am hopeful that we'll continue to see the same kind of level of high caliber, but I do know that they did spend an awful lot of money on the first few episodes of the season. But I think one of the other things that they may have kind of taken away from season one, and we've sort of seen them... Season one felt like it was very much an attempt to push in every direction against all of the different kind of, against all of the sort of comfort zones of Star Trek. And I think they kind of now have a good sense of which directions they want to push further in and which ones they are kind of going to go back more into that comfort zone on. And I think one of the things coming out of the first season was we didn't get a ton of really great sort of, you know, establishing shots of starships. We did not spend a lot of time looking at the Discovery from the outside. You know, they would just be really quick shots and then we'd be done. And this episode definitely kind of took us much more back to the sort of Star Trek of old, where you would have sort of the long lingering establishing shots of starships. And I think that kind of contributed a bit towards making Brother feel tonally and production-wise much more similar to, I think, Star Trek that we're more familiar with and more comfortable with than I think season one did.
Yeah, this felt like a great combination of a Star Trek series and also a Star Trek film. Like the amount of action when I first watched it and it finished and I had a minute to kind of, you know, digest everything I just saw. I got to watch it with a friend and he will tell you, like at one point I said, you know, the CGI in this is amazing. Like it really felt like I was watching a movie. And when I look back, like while there was so much action, there was still such a great balance of character development, character interaction. And the more that I watch it, the more that I love it. And I love finding that balance. So hopefully we'll see more of this in the next five episodes for sure. Maybe not at the same rate. And then we might get some bottle episodes down the road. We'll see, I guess. But Patrick, did you think that this episode just really felt kind of different from the first season? And if you did, then why?
Yeah, it really did. And I can't put my finger on one thing, but because I felt that the first season was very cinematic, you know, very much like watching a movie every episode. But this really took that further. And I think to your point about the kind of the shots of starships and just a lot more than just those character moments, but we also got what we know from Trek, the interaction between starships, seeing the Enterprise kind of in the window when Pike and Burnham were speaking. These are things I didn't feel like we got too much of in the last season. And it was really interesting to see. And honestly, I hope that we see more of it, but it does seem like it was very expensive to produce. I mean, even the sequence where they were in the pods, you know, heading towards the asteroid, that seemed like that was something that was straight out of a movie and something that I'm not sure makes as much sense sometimes for television, but really did make for a great sequence.
Yeah, absolutely. Heather, you kind of started us off with this point. Is there anything that you want to add?
I mean, I think the most important thing is that to me, it did really feel very different from season one, but it still felt like the same show.
Yeah.
Like it didn't feel like it did a complete 180 and it's an entirely different show now. It still felt like the same show. There was just more of a feeling of camaraderie, kind of, amongst all the different characters.
Yeah, no, that's definitely one of the most noticeable changes for me. I have like so many notes under initial reaction that I'm not going to go through because, you know, they'll, as I said earlier, like, let's just talk about them when they come up because we may not come back to them. But I literally have too many notes, so I would be here for 30 minutes. But yeah, the presence of the bridge crew, the fact that, you know, in the past, they were all named in different episodes, but it would be like once in the entire season we got names for a couple of characters. So having that roll call, but also having specific focus on every single bridge crew, each one had lines. Arium had lines. Even Sarah Mittich, who, Alex, remind me what her new character's name is.
I think it's Lieutenant Nilsson.
Yeah, Nilsson. Like, even she got a line when we finally saw her. So it was super exciting to see that focus. Like, that was a big complaint that I heard. Well, I don't know if it was a big complaint. It was just a complaint that I heard a lot, a criticism that I have no idea who they are. They're not included. And I feel like this is something where whether the writers heard that criticism and listened, you know, whatever it was really great to see. Like, even Connolly and Non from the Enterprise had lines, you know, had participated in the episode instead of just being stand-ins. So I really enjoyed that. I also enjoyed I felt like this episode, despite having some very serious content and serious moments, had a nice balance of humor too. And yeah. So that's another thing I would see. Oh, you know, Discovery is too dark. And not only did I feel like the lighting on the ship, like literally was lighter and brighter, I felt like the tone, whether it was Tilly or, you know, making the comment about the new uniforms when they're walking with Captain Pike down the hallway. There was a lot of humor that was really well balanced and not awkward or anything. All right. Any final comments we want to make about Drop the Record and how we felt? Anybody?
I will say that I agree with you. It really didn't feel forced, the humor. And it was one of the things I really enjoyed about the episode. Because sometimes, and I won't call out another sci-fi series on Fox, but I really feel like they integrated it very well without making it seem like they were forcing the humor in there. It seemed very natural.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and move on to play a new track where we talk about what we learned that's new in the Star Trek universe. Heather, what did you learn that you'd like to talk about?
Well, first thing I learned is that Tilly and Burnham are the founding mothers of new science.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a science geek in the first place. And so I really love when they go off and some people are the exact opposite and they're like, oh, I hate all that science mumbo jumbo gabbing stuff. I love it. And I think, like, especially with their science aspect, because they are a science vessel at its core. So a lot of the science aspect has a lot to do and is like gets incorporated with what their actual mission is. So even when they're working on some crazy science thing, it connects back to what they're doing in the first place, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. I loved that moment. Like, hashtag founding mother. Like, it's so cool. And I'll probably save my thoughts on this till the end, because I want to talk about Star Trek Discovery's relationship to women and how it represents women. But seeing women do science, and especially in this episode, we got a couple new women characters who I'm sure will be brought up here when we're talking about new stuff. Lots of women doing science, and like, it's so important to see this, whether you're a young girl or a woman like I am. It's so extremely meaningful and just a really cool moment to see two women geeking out about something like this. So yeah, totally agree. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, I wanted to, because he's new to us in this forum, I wanted to bring up Captain Pike here. Mm-hmm. Because I think Captain Pike was like a warm gust of comforting fresh air that the show really needed, but you didn't realize it until you actually saw him on screen. And considering he's a character that really, like, yes, he's not new to the Star Trek universe, but this is the first time we're getting to see him in action, really in depth. And the way he came onto that ship and was just the complete opposite of the captain they had in season one was so wonderful. He was so supportive. He was understanding. And he was what a true leader should be.
Yeah. So let's talk about Pike for a minute since we're here. Patrick, what are your thoughts on our new captain?
Oh, I agree with Heather that he's kind of what we needed, and we didn't realize we needed it until he transported it onto the Discovery. Because I keep thinking about that speech that he made where the camera kind of long panned on him as he was walking around the bridge and across the bridge crew, pointing out that he got an F in astrophysics at the Academy. It was so, I mean, he did say, "I'm not Worka," but even without saying it, we knew right away that this was going to be a completely different person, a completely different feeling than what we had in season one. I think my favorite line was when he was in the ready room and said, "Where the hell do people sit?" And Burnham's like, "Well, we don't like setting opinions here." So Anson Mount just sold it so well. I can't speak enough to how well that, you know, he came to this character that was someone that we've seen, obviously, in the Kelvin timeline, which would have been different from the Prime timeline. And we've only really seen in the Menagerie and the Cage, just adding extra dimensions of this character within a single episode, you know, single 60 minutes, just really adding to it. And I loved everything that came out of Pike's mouth in this episode.
All right.
Not alone.
No. So Pike has charmed Heather. He has charmed Patrick. Alex, did Captain Pike charm you as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think my main takeaway from Brother as opposed to Star Trek Discovery Season 1 is that the leadership of the ship matters more for the tone of the overall show than I think the production realized for season one of Discovery. And I think did realize by the end and made a very conscious choice to go in a different direction for season two. I think a lot of the criticism of Discovery around season one's darker tone really comes from the fact that we had a captain who, you know, was from the Mirror Universe, right? And we didn't realize it until the end of the show. And, you know, he got his comeuppance. But a lot of the things around there not being much of a collegial atmosphere on the bridge, some of the stories around, you know, the treatment of the tardigrade, ultimately come back to the fact that we had a captain who, you know, did not meet up to Starfleet's ideals for what a captain should be. And I think the show thought that they could kind of insulate them, the tone of the season a bit from having an evil captain, but that did sort of leak into the whole season as a whole. And I think you definitely see that really starkly when Pike arrives on the ship, which is that, you know, even though the captain is not the main character for this show, Michael Burnham is the main character for this show, the leadership of the system in which Burnham finds herself is so super important, not just to the characters themselves, but frankly also to the show itself. And so Pike was a huge kind of breath of fresh air and helped pull a lot of the components that had been there in season one, but maybe had not been fully utilized, like the other members of the bridge crew who, you know, had very, very minor roles in the first season, and kind of gelled that together in a way that we would anticipate from a Starfleet captain. We knew that the captains were important, but I think until we were in a situation where we had a captain who we were seeing week in, week out, who, you know, was not kind of on the level as far as Star Trek was concerned, it really kind of reinforced, I think, that is such an important component of the show. And I think they've knocked it out of the park with the addition of Pike.
Yeah, this casting. I was a fan of casting Anson Mount when it happened. I did watch him on the Hell on Wheels. That's really the only thing that I've seen him in. And I loved the show. So I was very excited. And, you know, I've had thoughts about having the inclusion of Pike and Spock and how this is all going to work. And we'll talk about Spock later, but this exceeded expectations. Like, I thought, okay, great. I already like the actor. I like the character. So sure, I bet I'm going to enjoy it, but no, like, I major crush. I'm team Tilly here. Like, Tilly and I are on the same page, as it sounds like Heather and maybe Patrick. Everyone here is just like crushing on Pike. He is just amazing. You guys have already said everything that really needs to be said. But yeah, I agree with you, Alex. This is definitely something where it seems like production realized what didn't work and then turned around and went in direction that certainly is working better, between having a captain that we already know but is different. And I do want to point out, I tweeted it, but I did see some confusion over timeline issues. So, Alex, really quick, do you want to just explain where this happens in the timeline, like with the cage?
Yes. So we've seen Pike in the prime timeline Star Trek canon twice before. Once in the cage, in which he was captain of the Enterprise, and then in the first season of the original series in the Menagerie, by which time he had suffered an accident that had rendered him crippled. Star Trek Discovery Season 2 takes place in between the events of the cage and the Menagerie. I think we're about 2 years after the events of the cage and about 8 years prior to the accident that would render him paralyzed. So we really are kind of seeing the character at a point that we don't have much kind of a reference point for him in. Obviously, in the cage, you know, he was presented as a character who I think had gotten quite weary of Starfleet and of, you know, having to look after his crew. But I think the events of that episode were important to his arc of sort of getting over that. And that's clearly not, you know, the same. He's not in the same place in the cage by Discovery Season 2. They'll be really interested to see how over the course of the season they dive into some of those themes and elements. But right now we are a number of years before he's paralyzed, but also a couple of years after the Pike that Jeffrey Hunter played in the cage.
Perfect. Thank you so much. So Heather, any last things you want to mention for Play a New Track?
No, I think most of my notes come in the third section. So
all right. Well, we will move on to Patrick. Patrick filled in at the last minute, which we're super excited about, but he didn't have time to really sit down and go with the format. So he's going to wing it, but I know he's going to be awesome. So go for it, Patrick.
No pressure. Really, we're talking about playing a new trick here, right? So for me, Tilly and Stamets, they're not necessarily new, but I feel like the relationship evolved. And for me, that was another level, because obviously in the first season, Stamets saw Tilly as kind of annoying at the beginning. You know, they really kind of came to like each other as the season went on. And if you read any of the comics, and I won't bring too much of that up here, but there's some more backstory there between Tilly and Stamets. But that whole interaction to me was kind of another level, and really was very Star Trek-y, if I want to call it that, to me. Where, you know, she tried to appeal to Stamets as a scientist when he mentioned that he was leaving, and then went away from that and just appealed to him as a human being, you know, emotional human being, you know, to try to say that, hey, I don't want you to leave. And I think for me, that was something that was new. It was a little more emotional. You know, there were a number of emotional moments in season one, but this for me, I honestly, I won't lie, I teared up a little bit just, you know, seeing that interaction between them.
Well, and this, like, We're getting to see Stamets grieve. That was a question that was kind of, you know, left hanging, that I saw criticism from in the first season, is that, you know, his partner was murdered. And obviously he was affected, but will we see him grieve? And so, yeah, same page. I was really happy. I hate saying I was happy to see someone so devastated. But to see him being in a place where he's able to watch the videos and sit with his grief and kind of, you know, come to appreciate Cassilian opera.
Oh, I agree. There was so much happening at the end of season one, outside of just their relationship, that there really wasn't time. You know, the episode for the finale could have probably been 2 hours long if they wanted it to be.
Yeah.
So it was great. Like I said, like you said, it's not great to be cheering for that, but I really felt that connection, because, you know, that death in season one was hard. I think anybody that's enjoyed this series did not enjoy seeing that on screen, and wanted to see more of these characters together. And I'm glad that we're seeing kind of the aftermath of that. And then hopefully, well, not even hopefully, but definitely we're going to see more of, you know, their relationship as the season goes along. And I'm excited to see where that, you know, how that happens, where that comes from.
Yeah. Just since that was such a moving moment, I just wanted to reach out. Heather, did you have anything you wanted to say about Stamets and Tilly?
That moment, I started tearing up as soon as I heard the music, and it just got worse as the entire scene went on. But it was so beautifully done. It was beautifully written. It was beautifully acted by both Anthony and Mary. And it was wonderful to see him dealing with his grief, but to also see, like Patrick said, how their relationship has evolved to the point that she's not just an ensign underneath him anymore, that they're friends. Because that last line when she just looks at him and goes, I don't want you to go, like that's something I would have said to my friend. And I'm just going, oh yeah, okay, go ahead.
Oh, Alex, what about you?
I thought it was a fabulous couple of scenes. The end of season one was so plot heavy that it didn't, you know, because they had so much story to kind of to propel them through in order to get through it all by the end of the season. There really was no opportunity for a stop and a pause. And I think one of the things that Discovery, based on this first season, seems to be doing is trying to spend more time with the characters and less time on just sort of these propulsive plot elements. And I think that's a really smart move, because ultimately it helps us get more invested in the characters, more invested in the show itself. And those scenes between Anthony Rapp and Mary Wiseman were played extremely well. And I'm very excited to see how that relationship continues to grow and how the Culber story will play out over the course of the season.
Yep. It's one of the things that I am looking forward to most. And just thinking about what's in store for us, I get emotional. So I'm just going to stop there. But yes, props to Mary and Anthony for that acting, especially Anthony, because man, I felt that pain. All right, let's go back to Patrick for more things that you'd like to talk about that you learned.
Oh, I didn't realize, and I don't think I've seen this in the Star Trek series before, that you could throw out an artificial gravity device and catch an asteroid with it. I thought that was a really, at the end of the episode, you know, they've gone through a lot of conflict, Burnham discovering what's going on with Spock and so forth. It was interesting. It was very Star Trek-y, like science-y, you know, grounded in reality, but not necessarily something that we would ever see happen. So I enjoyed that. And obviously that's yet another mystery that we're going to see, is, you know, this whole thing where Tilly discovered that the asteroid interacted oddly with the spores. I thought that was, you know, we've got a lot of mysteries going on so far. We've got the whole thing with Spock, which obviously is the main mystery, the interesting things going on with these red bursts, and then now we've got this whole thing with, well, how's the spore drive interact with that? We kind of were, I think there were a lot of questions after season one of, well, you know, the canon experts are saying, well, there's no spore drive in Star Trek after this point. So how do we resolve this situation where, you know, we had the spore drive in season one, but all of a sudden is it never going to be spoken of again? So I was kind of happy to see that, it, you know, the situation with the spores and the spore drive were addressed early in the season. I was kind of thinking it was something they would push back to later in the season and maybe talk about offhanded, but it was nice to see that it's still something that they're going to address. And you know, as Kurtzman has said, they're going to try to tie everything into quote unquote canon, you know, whatever you want to describe that as. But that was something that I thought was very interesting in the episode.
I kind of squeed when I saw the gravity simulator. Yeah, it seemed new to me too. Alex, have we ever seen a gravity simulator before?
I don't think so. I know we've seen gravity manipulation in various different forms. I mean, ultimately, the tractor beam itself is a device designed to do that. I think one of the more interesting things, though, about that, and a few of the things that we saw during the episode, like these telescopic lenses that the ship has and also these landing pods, is something that was referenced early in season one, but was never really capitalized upon, is that the Discovery is a science ship. Lorca made mention in Contexts for Kings about how, you know, it was a ship of scientists and the ship was capable of running like 300 different experiments simultaneously. And I think this is the first episode where we've really seen them capitalize upon that idea that this is a ship of scientists and that they do have, you know, lots of scientists on board who are conducting lots of different experiments, have lots of different pieces of technology, and then being able to deploy those pieces of technology in order to be able to, you know, advance the story. And I really liked the way that Brother focused on that. And I hope that the rest of the season continues to kind of pull on that idea, because it's slightly different from, I guess Voyager was also a science ship, but it was a pretty small science ship. And so I'm looking forward to the Discovery being sort of one of the most technologically capable ships in the Federation, also being kind of a really badass science ship and taking advantage of that and having that being a real focus of the story.
Awesome. Yeah, super, super excellent insight there. Did you have anything different for Play a New Track, Alex?
One of the nice things that was new for the show this week was that everything seemed to gel, you know, so well together. The characters all interacted really well. Pike fit into the show seamlessly. I think one of the things that folks had been worried about when the Enterprise appeared at the end of the season one finale, Will You Take My Hand, was that this show was going to transition from being Star Trek Discovery to Star Trek The Enterprise show, and that the Enterprise was going to sort of take over the show. And I think Brother really kind of pushes back on that idea very, very forcefully. I mean, we have Pike, obviously, but, you know, we're seeing Pike as captain of the USS Discovery, not as captain of the USS Enterprise. And we only spent a couple of seconds at the end of the episode, even on the Enterprise itself. It was very much a minor supporting character from the show. And even though all indications seem to be that the ship will reappear at various points in the season, given that we know that Number One ultimately appears in at least one episode, and she did not appear in this one, this isn't the Enterprise taking the spotlight away from Discovery. It's Captain Pike becoming a captain of the Starship Discovery and us kind of following this crew through their adventures. So that kind of really put my mind at ease about what the future direction is now that we've had the Enterprise introduced.
Yeah, me too. That's something that I worried about, because I wanted Discovery to stand on its own. And it really still is. This integration is not taking anything away from Discovery or the crew. In my opinion, it's just expanding, and I don't have great words for it, but it's just enriching the series, and I'm excited to see what they do here in the future. So we've kind of gone over pretty much everything I had, which was a lot of the technology, but I did want to talk about two people that are new. The first was, oh shoot, I didn't write down, is she Lieutenant Nan or is she Commander?
I believe she's Commander Nan.
Okay. And Alex, I'll actually let you pop in, because I saw somewhere, I don't know if you tweeted this or it just came from the Trek Core account, but they were referring to a TNG episode with another character that looked very similar to her, who was a Barzan. Is that right?
Yes. So this is something that has not been officially confirmed by the production, but there are a few races that appeared in this episode that weren't specifically called out as such, but who looked like updated versions of races that had previously appeared in Star Trek, of which Commander Nan was one of them. So in the Next Generation season 3 episode, The Price, the Enterprise visits a planet called Barzan, where there's a new wormhole that turns out to be an unstable wormhole, but there's a bidding war between the Federation and the Ferengi and the Cresselians over who gets to kind of operate the wormhole. And the Barzans had the same sort of forehead appliance as Commander Nan, and also those sort of odd appliances on either side of her cheeks. I tweeted, the closest it's ever gotten to confirmation is I did tweet when the trailer came out a few months ago, there was a shot of Commander Nan, and I tweeted something like, oh, I wonder if she's a Barzan. And Neville Page liked the tweet, but never responded to it. So Memory Alpha has gone with the fact that she's a Barzan. The other race is Linus, the sneezy alien in the turbo lift. Mm-hmm. Again, not specifically called out as such, but looks very similar to a Saurian, which was a race that was part of the crew in Star Trek The Motion Picture. In the big wreck deck scene where the whole crew is assembled, there's a very tall, very purple-looking alien, and Linus looks very, very similar. So same as with the Barzans, if you go to Memory Alpha and look up Linus, it says that Linus is a Saurian. Production's never confirmed that, but it's very, very strongly indicated in both cases.
Awesome. Well, I thought it was just really great to see her. I loved that she had lines. She wasn't someone that was just there. And it's maybe we'll see more of her. I'm not entirely sure. But the other main character who, again, I don't know how much we're going to see of her, but Jet Reno seemed to also steal the show for many people watching the episode. And I, again, am just blown away to have this scientist, this engineer who kept everyone alive on the ship, who created this scouting technology that she refers to as her kids. I was so excited when I found out that Tig Notaro was joining. Although I didn't know a lot about Tig Notaro, I have since gone and watched some of her stand-up and her show. Absolutely loved her. So, Heather, were you excited about Jet Reno?
I was very excited about both Jet Reno and Commander Nahn. I think they are wonderful additions, definitely. They're both... especially Commander Reno, with everything she did on that ship, just to not only keep all those people alive, but to be willing to stay behind when everybody else got into escape pods to make sure she kept those people alive. I mean, just her force of will in that nature. And it's, sounds so simple when she's explaining it, like, oh, the body's just a machine. Like it was nothing to her. It's such a powerful character. And Nahn really was as well. They're both engineers. And so I'm really hoping that somewhere down the line, because Stamets, as much as Stamets was like technically listed as the chief engineer in season one, he's more of a scientist than an engineer. So I'm hoping somewhere down the line they need... Discovery needs a chief engineer, and it should be one of those women.
Awesome. Patrick, what are your thoughts on our new ladies?
Jet Reno, you know, I'm up to my elbows in Tellaray brains. Just an amazing way to introduce this character. And I was a little bit familiar with Tig Notaro via her Netflix stand-up previously. And I think Kurtzman has actually said that this was kind of handwritten for her. And it was perfect. I don't know if there was anybody else that could have filled that role. I got a very Scotty vibe from her, and not so much in terms of the personality, but in terms of the jury rigging, all sorts of different systems to keep these crew members alive. Seeing Captain Pike and going, well, what the hell would you have done, you know, if there were people in danger, and kind of reinforcing that, you know, as Starfleet officers, we don't leave people behind to die, you know, if there's something that we can do about it. And I thought, besides kind of the comedic relief that was there, you know, the techno babble that she probably had more than anybody in the episode, I thought it was a very powerful message for the character to just say, you know, well, what else was I going to do? I wasn't going to let these people die. I did whatever I could to, you know, to keep them alive and hope that I would get rescued. And for Nahn, I like the idea that the red shirt wasn't somebody that was, you know, was the one to kind of perish in the episode. I really am looking forward to seeing more of her in future episodes. Obviously, in terms of the species, that's been, like Alex said, not confirmed, but assumed, a very deep dive into Star Trek. So I'm hoping we see more of her. I think there's definitely more that we can, we can get out of the character. We didn't see too much. I thought there was a lot more meat for Jet and not so much for Nahn, but I'm hoping that we see both of them, you know, in the coming episodes.
For sure. And Alex, what are your thoughts about Reno and Nahn?
Evolution is a fickle bitch, Heather. I love both characters. I thought they were great additions. I'm not sure that we'll see Tig Notaro again, but I'd really like to. We don't have an identified chief engineer for Discovery, and I think it would be great to have her even in a supporting role, appearing, you know, every few episodes for a scene as the chief engineer of the Discovery. But if that's all we get, then, you know, it, what a great episode and few scenes it was. Really nice to see. And Nan was great too, actually. Very poised, and clearly there's a reason why the Enterprise gets all the best officers.
I also have to say that I loved Nan's outfit, that she had the jacket and like skirt over leggings with boots, that I totally want to cosplay that. Good luck to all the cosplayers out there, because you've got a lot of work to do. I know that our friend Mahogany Harris, who was on our deep dive of Ash Tyler, has committed to making the new spacesuit, which reminded me a lot of the Kelvin timeline jumpsuits. So I'm super excited to see some of these costumes brought to life at STLV and other conventions. So let's go ahead and move on to Spin It Again and talk about parts of the episode that stood out to us the most. Patrick, do you feel confident starting us off?
Sure. And I've talked about it before so far, and we all have, is what stood out to me was Captain Pike, just overall. He kind of ended up being the glue that brought everything together, especially with our bridge crew. A group that we've seen, like you said, Heather, individually in some episodes. You know, we learned some people's names previously, but not everybody was really called out at once. You know, we really didn't get to know everybody in the course of one episode. And I think that helped with this change in tone. We've gotten to a point with Pike that we know this, it's not season one anymore. There's no war. There's a little bit more levity. You know, he was cracking jokes. You know, he was bringing levity to the crew. And I honestly really did not expect to come out of this episode saying to myself, wow, Pike was really the best part of it. But I did. I just really think that not only the actor, Anson Mount, but what they wrote for him, dialogue-wise, just was amazing. And I think it's really probably what the show needed, you know, coming out of the quote-unquote dark season one, to not course correct, but bring us to a different path and come along to more of that Star Trek exploration and discovery that, you know, we're used to. So that's really what stood out for me in this first episode.
I have a feeling that if you didn't do a photo op with him this past STLV, you will be this coming year.
So I did do a photo op this past STLV. So that photo has actually been sitting on my desk at work, along with, oddly enough, next to my photo op with Captain Lorca himself, Jason Isaac.
That's a nice transition there. I like it very much. All right, Heather, it sounded like you had some good stuff prepared. So why don't you tell us what stood out for you?
I definitely have a couple different things. First off, to go just a little bit off of what Patrick was saying, Captain Pike, I didn't go into this episode expecting for him to stand out to me so much. And he really did. And it's also a credit to Anson Mount's acting abilities, because like you mentioned, watching him on Hell on Wheels, the one thing I've seen Anson in before was the not very good Marvel series, The Inhumans. But his character on that show was a character who couldn't talk. And so that's the one thing that really gets me about him, is how he can add facial expressions to really bring his acting to an entire different level. Just his different. And I also think, like, during the show, you see little bits of Pike that relate back to the Pike that we saw in the cage, especially his determination to not want to leave anyone behind. We don't leave a Starfleet brother or sister behind. And you see that, like, not just in their first exchange after realizing the Hiawatha's on the asteroid, but you see that later when Burnham gets blown out by a circuit and doesn't end up on the transporter pad, and then Pike's the one that comes back to get her. Pike really stood out a lot to me. So that's just going off a little bit of what Patrick said, but I have a couple other things here. The next part that really hit me was the evolution between Burnham and Sarek's relationship, because I think in season one, their relationship is very tense at first. And then, especially after the events of Lethe in season one, they both, not just Burnham, but Sarek as well, starts to open up to her more. And that really shows in their conversation that they had in her quarters, where he mentions about how he used to hear Amanda reading Alice to her, and it comforted him too. And also, like, that he could tell that there was something she wasn't telling him about her and Spock's relationship, and that if she wanted to talk to him about it, he was there for her. Like, that just really struck me as a very un-Vulcan thing to say, but it's something a father would say to a daughter.
I will come back to some of what you're talking about. I think we're just the same, Heather. We've just been separated. but yes. All right. It sounded like you might have something else to mention too.
One big one and then one tiny one, I promise. Okay. So the big one was, I really, like, my favorite scene in the entire episode was the scene in the landing pods after Connelly bites the dust and Pike's pod is injured, and he like starts insisting to Burnham, like, no, I don't want to lose you too. And she goes, you need to trust us, sir. I told you we don't abandon each other. Discovery has you. And the fact that she didn't say, I have you, she said Discovery has you, was a very team building moment. Like, she trusts those two women on board the ship who are helping her that they will be there to help her catch him. And that as much as, like, Pike was almost resigned to say, I'm falling and I'm going to die right here. And Burnham goes, no, you're not. We're going to save you.
I love the fact that three women worked together to save the captain.
Absolutely. I did. It was that just whole sequence between Awashikun, Detmer, and Burnham working together to save him was absolutely wonderful to me.
Yeah. All right. And what was the one last thing?
The one last thing is the fortune.
Yeah.
The fortune that he finds, which, as I know, every single person who read that fortune, which is not every cage is a prison, nor every loss eternal, relates that to Pike's ultimate fate down the road. But I also think there might be a second meaning in there relating to a certain crew member who's lost and needs to become found in this season. So I'm hoping.
Curious to see how that plays out. All right, Alex, what stood out to you the most?
To me, one of the things that stood out the most was the balance between telling an episodic story versus setting up what will be a longer story arc for the season. Because you had the episodic story was a Federation ship is in distress and the Discovery crew works together to rescue the survivors. But then you have this beginning of a much longer story that seems like, or two longer stories that are very closely tied together that seem like they'll play themselves out over the course of the season. One is the relationship between Burnham and Spock and whatever this unspoken event is in their past that Sarek refers to, that Burnham refers to a couple of times, in which it seems like, from what we saw of the characters, they had in the very early days a very frosty relationship, but Burnham implies that that improved and then went south again. So why did it then go south again? And then the second storyline that's tied into that, that will play itself out over the course of the season, is the sort of red signals and the red angels and whatever that means, you know, for the show, which, you know, it's really interesting. We got to the end of the episode and we really do not know any more about that than we did going into the episode. If you watch the trailers, we know there were seven red signals that appeared around the galaxy, and that there are these things called the Red Angels, and that Spock has seen them, and now Burnham has seen them too. So, you know, one of the things that came up at the end of season one was that there was a desire for more of a balance between the serialized storytelling and the episodic storytelling. And I think what stood out to me most from this episode was, I think they've started to do that. That there was one story that they told over the course of this episode. We got to the end and the Hiawatha was rescued, or at least the survivors of the Hiawatha were rescued. But that there was also this serialized story that kind of that they just started to tell the story of. So I'm hopeful that we'll see more of that throughout season two, and that in each episode you'll be able to pick out, all right, what was this episode's episodic story and how did it advance the larger narratives of the season as a whole?
Awesome. Yeah, I am finding that we are all talking about Burnham's real, and I mean Burnham is our lead character, but what I also had here was this enigma that is her relationship with Spock and what happened. And so part of my what stood out the most, just aside from Sonequa's acting, both Sonequa and Anson Mount do amazing things with their faces. We talk about face acting a lot, especially with like Mary and working through that makeup, but specifically the scene where Pike is in the landing pod and it is compromised and fractured. And the way that he looks at that is just so amazing, especially considering that's just green screen, that he is getting this look of fear and then subsequent joy and enthusiasm once everything works together and he gets ejected. But at the same time, when Burnham wakes up and, you know, her leg has the giant terrible thing. I don't know what the exact word for that thing is in her leg. But she sees, you know, we see this red angel type of imagery, or at least that's what I believe we're supposed to think it is. And the look on her face, just this childlike both wonder and fear and just disbelief. Again, like Sonequa is a gift to Star Trek for so many reasons. And so those two moments in that acting really stood out to me. But yeah, Burnham is so visibly, she's devastated by the fact that Spock has taken this leave of absence. And then when she finds out, you know, what he's attempting to do and why he's left, I am so curious as to the story here. I don't know. I'm going to assume it's not going to tie into the books, because there was a storyline with Burnham and Spock in Drastic Measures. But since that's not established as actual canon, you know, again, I don't know if we'll get any kind of reference there or not. But yeah, we haven't really talked about Spock, because though we saw a lot of baby Spock, there wasn't a lot of Spock himself. We did get the personal log, and I will go out on a limb and say that I am super excited to see Ethan Peck's Spock. I think in that small personal log, he got the timbre and the cadence of Leonard Nimoy's voice down. It gave me chills, so I'm excited to see what's there. But my final thought, you know, I've talked a lot about the role that women played in this episode. And, you know, overall, this is really the first Star Trek series that I think, it's not the first series that has a lot of women cast, right? But I feel like the writers, for the most part, pay respect to the women characters. And this isn't just the women writers that are involved. I think that overall, I see a great respect for women and a commitment to representation there. And so it's like for the first time in history, I'm watching a Star Trek that is really made to make women feel empowered and appreciated and not sexualized or dismissed in any way. And I know that's kind of a big statement. I'm not saying that all Star Trek has done this. Of course it hasn't. I just feel like this is a Star Trek that is really created for women and with women in mind. And I see that like with having the, you know, Oosake on Detmer and Burnham save Captain Pike. And then the very, I don't know if it was obvious to every viewer out there, but the death of Connolly and the way that happened, I don't want to go into some deep dive about mansplaining and everything that goes on there, but do some Google foo and pay attention to Twitter. And that was pretty much a direct message about how toxic masculinity will be accepted in Star Trek. And the answer is it won't be. So, you know, again, it's just for me, and I can't speak for Heather, but I would like to assume as another woman from some of the conversation we've had tonight that this Star Trek resonates on that level. And I think that's part of, at least for me, why Star Trek Discovery is my Star Trek. Heather, did you want to say anything there?
I completely agree with you. We are in total agreement once again. But yes, no, it resonates with me on a very deep and emotional level that I've honestly never felt that way about any sort of TV show before, like any Star Trek that came before this or anything else. I mean, there's just something about this show that hits me like that. So I do think that they are working really hard to make these women characters, every single woman character, like not just their lead women character, but every single woman character be powerful. And I'm very thankful for that.
I will say, you know, despite some of the treatment that specific women characters got in the first season, you know, one is coming back in her own way. So it may not be the Philippa Georgiou that, you know, we loved, but it's still a great role for Michelle Yeoh. And I'm excited to see what happens there. We miss you, Rekha Sharma. I thank you. Like it's just a powerful thing. And I would love to have more feedback from other women out there watching. Really quick, before we wrap up the show, I wanted to just do a little shout out because on the subject of representation, I noticed a certain character riding through the corridor. And so there was some stuff in the news a while back about casting characters, not just having characters that have a disability, but also casting actors who can properly represent those characters. And there was some conversation about, oh, well, you know, there aren't enough actors out there to fill in and to actually have those roles. And that's completely untrue. So thank you, George Alavizos. We were super excited to see you back in the show. And shout out, I don't think any of the writers listened to this Disco Track, but I hope that the fans will push to have him have lines in the show, because as wonderful as it has been to see him, it's more important for him to have speaking roles. So before we close up, I'm just going to go around really quick and give final thoughts for the show. So Patrick, final thoughts about the season premiere.
It was great, but I just wanted to say, as someone that is, you know, considered a cis white male, I love seeing this representation. This is Star Trek to me, you know, having these powerful women, having, you know, members of the Star Trek community that have disabilities represented within the show. This is what's important to me. You know, this is what I want to see as somebody that's, you know, getting on in years. I'm 37 now, you know, and I grew up with Star Trek TNG in the 80s. And then obviously, you know, everything else after that. But I love seeing this. I love that this show is embracing everybody. You know, it's not just a bunch of white guys running around on a starship. It's everybody, all walks of life. And for me, not just this episode, but for Star Trek Discovery, you know, total, that's what they're going for. And I appreciate that. And I love it. And I hope that it continues this season and for however many seasons that this series gets to go.
Hear, hear.
Thanks, guys. I know that you are both champions for women and for everyone. And I appreciate that so, so much. But Alex, any final thoughts besides hear, hear?
I can't wait to see where we're headed. As I think I said at the start, if Brother represents the caliber of this season as a whole, I think we're in for a really special season of Star Trek.
Agree. Heather, what about you?
I wanted to echo Patrick's sentiment that representation matters. I have a very personal story about how I relate to one of the characters on Discovery. I'm not going to share it here, but representation matters. And I'm so excited to see what happens in season two. I've been excited since the beginning of January But I've been excited ever since season one ended, and just seeing the premiere, I didn't think I could be more excited, but I am. So it's going to be awesome.
Well, I hope that John has you on list or on queue to be on Trek Profiles at some point. I think I know parts of your story, but I think it's important that you get a chance to tell everyone that story. So if you've not harassed him yet, you need to do that, or I will.
I have not harassed him yet.
If you're open to telling your story, which I hope that you will be, because that's one of my favorite parts of Star Trek, is how Star Trek affects us on a personal level. So I want to hear that story someday.
Okay.
And we would also be remiss if we didn't recognize Heather as the originator of the hashtag countdown to 1701 hype building for Discovery Season 2 over the first couple of weeks of January. So thank you, Heather. That was a lot of fun.
That was amazing.
That took off. I think the Star Trek Discovery like main account and the writers picked that up, if not even the main Star Trek account.
I saw everybody talking about that hashtag. I was reading so many threads that were people that were responding to that hashtag. It was so great.
Well, the main Discovery account was the one that picked it up first, and they did give me credit for it because they shared my original post and thanked me for it and gave me credit for it. And then it just started showing up everywhere else. I was just so amazed at how it took off. It was really awesome.
Well, thank you, Alex, for that reminder. And, you know, here at Disco Trek, I love to say, be a torchbearer, not a gatekeeper. And that was a really great way to be a torchbearer. So thank you so, so much. All right. Let's go ahead and go around the table and let people know where they can find us online if they'd like to continue the conversation. Patrick, do you have a Twitter?
I think so. It's at PatrickE34, obviously the most creative thing ever. But yeah, feel free to reach out to me via Twitter. I love interacting with Star Trek fans, as Heather knows. And it's been great to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you for filling in at the last minute. I was very excited to be able, I knew immediately who to reach out to. So super excited. And Heather, where can we find you?
You can primarily find me on Twitter. My Twitter account is at nerdygal33, or the profile name is Never Apologize for Being Nerdy, because that's something no one should ever apologize for.
I agree very much. Alex, where can we find you?
You can find me in a few places at the moment. So on Twitter, I'm at Alexander T. Perry. As you mentioned, Heather, at the start of the show, I've also taken over hosting duties for the Tricorder Transmissions weekly news show, Weekly Trek. So you can also find me at Weekly Trek. And because Discovery has started back up again, my regular Canon Connections series of articles is being published each week, in which I pick out all of the references to previous Star Trek from that episode of Discovery. And I'm also trading main review duties with good friend of the show, Claire Little. So she did the premiere. I'll be doing the second episode, and then we'll be trading off each week. So you can also find more in-depth thoughts from me on Discovery episodes every other week at trektor.com.
I am at LLA Posper on Twitter. And I don't know, I'll throw it out there. I decided I could not wait a week to talk about Discovery without spoilers. So I don't know how often I'll be live tweeting episodes, but I did make a new Twitter that is at Oh My Starships. And that's where I will be having spoilery discussions if you want to hear my thoughts before I do the podcast. Our show is at Disco_Trek. Our network is at The Tricorder Show. We have something like, I don't know, 10, 15 shows at this point with more in development. We're growing at a rapid pace, and we're also open to having some new voices on the show. So give us a holler, shout out, reach out to us, tell us what you like, what you don't like. Join us on Patreon. We love our Patreon family. And hang in there, because we will be back next week to talk more Star Trek Discovery with two new guests from the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas group on Facebook. Make sure to join us there. In the meantime, live long and prosper.
Hit it.
Getting to the bottom of these signals is of utmost importance to the Federation. You never forget your first jump.
Spock had a vision. He called it the Red Angel and changed him.
I will find him.
Nothing is ever truly gone. Termination begets creation. It's why life is eternal. Captain Georgia.
We joined Section 3-1.
Fancy.
You're gonna have to start trusting me.
I'm sure you need to get back to your snake pit.
I would like to believe that somewhere within the unknown, there is purpose. And we are being guided toward it. Someone or something is going to end all sentient life in the galaxy. Figure it out. It is what we do.
Star Trek Discovery. New episodes Thursdays.